Hello, lovies. This is Christina with Columbus Eye Psychic LLC here on Universal Spirit Podcast, also known as Mystical Charms. So we are in season 10 talking about working with deities. And that is not limited to just folk spirits and mythical entities. So today we will be talking about biblical / Egyptian deities and spirits. And though this would have been in the first episode, I decided to make it the second episode because it's biblical text, in Egyptian text, this is more, not more, but it's more popular, okay? We're going to be talking about Baphomet, Lucifer, Lilith, Horus, Jesus, Solomon, Michael, and Capri. And if you're unfamiliar with Khepri or Capri, he is depicted as a masculine energy or masculine god with a scarab face. And he's represented by the rising and moving of the morning sun and is therefore known as the sun god. Also represented the renewal of life. So Khepri or Capri would be more like a Egyptian earth god. Who controls and is represented by the sun, mostly the sun, and also the moon of the setting of the sun, the binaries of day and night, good and evil, you know, and every type of opposite that is in existence. Now, I have my scarab collection that is in my shop, and this is in honor of the sun god Capri. And he is mostly depicted as a scarab. And if you guys have seen that 1990s movie, The Mummy, that scarabs have been depicted as like these little evil bugs that come in and kill you. But they really do represent longevity and long life, as per how, you know, the setting and rising of the sun is eternal. So that would be more of what the scarabs would represent. And also the scarab is actually one of the strongest beetles or bugs that you will find in the Middle East. And the reason why also that he's represented by the scarab is because the scarab has one of the toughest, if not the toughest, shells that can withstand many storms and very, very strong, very big predators. That represents resilience to evil or resilience to defeat. It could take a year for a scarab to go across the desert, but they're going to make it through because of the fact that they can hide their eyes, you know, from the sun, and they do not succumb to death for a very long time. They can go, I think it's 6 months without even eating. So Khepri is one of those ever-present deities, because if you do not physically see or feel, it's more like there's a knowing. This has to do with intuition. First, Khepri, I would say, came to me in regards to just being very interested in death. At the time of my studying of, you know, the mystical, I did, you know, get to shadow work and death. And when death showed up, it seemed as though Khepri, or, you know, the scarab, I was just so drawn to the scarab for some reason. I just couldn't figure out why. And at the time that I was, in fact, not looking at death as openly as I thought, because my philosophy is death is just another door into another room. However, I never really pieced together what that room could look like. Not only that, that other world, very similar to the one we currently live in. Right, just if you're a Stranger Things fan, it's more like it's the world that we live in, but the upside down, right? The opposites, and there is a place that the opposites do exist. And Khepri is one of those guides or one of those links between the living and the dead. Okay, when working with Khepri, I would say of offerings of things that are scarab shaped, or scarab photos or statues. And if you can get an actual scarab or even something close to it that would represent a physical scarab is, I probably say, the strongest offering or honoring that I have given. Other than that, just a burning candle and the extinguishing of that candle, but really letting the candle go out naturally rather than physically putting it out. But of course, if you have to put it out, put it out. But the nature of the burning and the extinguishing. Now we're going to move on to Horus. Now Horus, or Ra, is like the god of all Egyptian gods, right? Or the god of gods in, you know, in all of the universe, so to speak. But it's found mostly in Egyptian mythology. And of course, Horus is represented as the all-ever-seeing eye. Though his whole body would be the form of a falcon, whose right eye was the sun or the morning star, representing power, and those whose eye was the moon or evening star, representing healing. Okay, so he is a bird with two different eyes. So understanding the, you know, the flight, or the, you know, the honor, bravery that comes with winged animals. Also, to be a winged animal definitely represents a load of responsibility, because physically, in order for the bird to fly, it has to take accountability for its own weight. Okay, but Horus's parents, Isis and Osiris, you know, the main people of the underworld, okay, being the son of that, he ignites you with so much otherworldly wisdom. Now, Horus was introduced to me, or came to me, like when I was in my younger years. I would say about 17, 18, and I finally had the courage to actually put a tattoo. Actually, it was my first tattoo, was the Eye of Horus on the back of my neck, because I felt as though not only was this wisdom or was this presence ever with me, but I also possessed some of that, either that power or that ability, just to see beyond the physical. Okay, because you're going to get a lot of psychic abilities when in the presence of Horus. Okay, you're going to be able to see the seen, the unseen, the known, the unknown. Like, it would almost be like you're walking into your visions, physically walking into your vision. That's how clear it will be. In my particular case, an offering or a veneration of Horus would be to have the eye, you know, planted, placed, you know, somewhere very close to you, okay? Somewhere where it cannot be disturbed, especially in a space that you would particularly want to keep harm out of. Or also to keep, you know, any type of disturbances or noise, especially if you are a very studious person, you need to focus and concentrate. And then when it comes to actual doing like physical work, you don't want to be disturbed. It is, you know, well of you to put an Eye of Horus. Even though people use the evil eye, the Eye of Horus has a different type of energy where, like I said, it's the unseen. You know, it'll keep people that might be disturbed, want to disturb you, just completely away from you, to never ever like make that mistake. They'll just be completely like boom, like out of your face. And in my experience, okay, placing an Eye of Horus on your front door, you'll definitely sleep a lot better. Not on your bedroom door. It's got to be a door or something that is outward of your home or outward of your space, because the eye is meant to be seen by those who are wanting to disturb you. I place one, like I said, on the back of my neck. You know, I have an eye in the back of my head, so to speak. So it's kind of like people who are, you know, wanting to do me harm behind me that I cannot see, don't get a chance to get that close to me. I'm not saying everyone should tattoo an Eye of Horus on their body, but I'm saying for me, it has worked out. When it comes to the relationship between Khepri and Horus, these Egyptian deities, I would say really is to have or keep accountability with oneself. Also to keep a good head on your shoulders during any types of times, during good times, not to get too big for your britches, and even during bad times, to understand that bad times do in fact end, okay? And that it doesn't last forever. It does wane on our patience. Okay, so those are things that when getting into relationship with these deities is something that you're gonna have to develop if they are not currently developed in you. And not gonna say they won't work with you, but they work with you so much better the more accountability you take, okay, and the more you work on yourself trying to have patience, and understanding that things do change with time. Though time is measured differently in the other world, that's what the Eye of Horus is for. It's like understanding that there are forces behind what you can see. There are unseen forces controlling them. And when you remember that constantly, you vibrate at such a higher level to the point where the mundane things will not get to you as much. I'm not gonna say they'll never get to you, but they will, you'll be able to conquer them with ease. Consciously, of course. Now we'll be moving on to Archangel Michael. Now this, he would be considered an angel, an archangel, an angelic type spirit or deity. So even though he might not be listed in the general context of what a god or a goddess is, he is in fact a very powerful angelic figure. Also a biblical figure mentioned in biblical text as being one of the highest ranking angels in heaven, or the right hand of God, or being second to God. Understanding that even though his role is of a angelic metaphysical servant, he's also a very strong, protective, and very wise entity. Archangel Michael and most mythologies about him is represented as a man with really big white wings. He can have dark or light hair, very muscular, and he is, clothed in lots and lots of armor. He's usually depicted in white, in red, or the color purple. Okay, he's also been known to be the leader of all angels. A lot of people who do, in fact, do angelic work would consider Archangel Michael the top angel, and after him would just be God himself or even Jesus, right? That he is somewhat of the father of all the angelic beings, or he's responsible for all the angelic beings, and that keeps everybody's morale in check. Or, he's also mentioned of, the most loyal of the non-fallen angels of heaven. Because of course there's the other 71 angels, Uriel, Raphael, Gabriel, all of them, but there's no doubt that Michael is in fact the top tier guy. He's mentioned more than once in the Bible, but the most popular is when he is mentioned in regards to fighting Immortal. Oh my God, I cannot think of the name off the top of my head. But Michael asks him, when is he going to give up? And the mortal says, never. And when they started realizing that the mortal was not winning this fight. Okay. So it's a shame that I don't know the actual passage, right? But I'll link it in the bottom. But it's about perseverance. Perseverance. It is about, enduring. It's about strength. It's about honor and integrity. Okay, Michael is a symbol of strength, and not only of physical strength, also of mental and emotional strength. It's kind of like, he is there when you have to do what is needed, even if you have to do the hard thing, or even if you have to do something that is, so like long lasting, or long enduring. He is the strength that will get you through it. Now, I grew up as a Christian and I was taught as a Christian, and Archangel Michael was never really spoken about individually because I was taught more about God and Jesus and the Holy Trinity. But the whole, legion of angels is usually left out when you are speaking about Christianity on, on a major scale. Angels are mentioned when we're talking about God giving out his commands, okay? But Archangel Michael is a commander of his own fleet of angels. okay? And he is a leader. He is a conqueror, you know, and he is, you know, a very, you know, strategic type energy. So I never really accessed his energy, I would say, until I became a mother. And I kind of felt that Archangel Michael within me, that not only can I be a mother physically and physically be a female, but Archangel Michael definitely, you know, kind of gives you this masculine feeling of protection, you know, really just, you know, doing the hard stuff, thinking without emotion, so to speak, having compassion, but not too much compassion where you're messing up your plans. It's really like a dad figure, or really like a husband type figure. And it, like I said, it charges the masculinity in you, right? And after I became a mom, I did, for some reason, just keep having dreams about a big angel that I could assume was Michael, very beautiful, you know, just always giving me a hug and just really telling me everything is going to be okay. But at the same time, you know, you can't just let things happen. You've got to stand up for yourself. You've got to fight, you know. So it really is about that, and that inner integrity, where it's like, if no one else is going to stand up for you, you need to stand up for you. But it's also, you know, he reminds you that there is somebody else to stand up for you as well, but you get yourself up so we can do this thing together, so to speak. So there is a togetherness when it comes to Archangel Michael, and that's how I work with Archangel Michael. Also, you know, wearing purple on Friday is a very Archangel Michael thing to do. Purple represents power, especially if you are in legal troubles. Always recite, you know, the Apostles' Creed. And on Fridays, if you're trying to invoke love, you know, wear light pink, or, you know, wear red if, you know, if you're more drawn to the color red. But I mean, I like pink better, and I invoke Archangel Michael, especially when I feel like my love life is not very strong. I call upon him, or I'll do those little things on Friday to invoke that energy to revive what I think might be dead. Because angel energy is an eternal energy. It never dies. You know, it's really about tapping into it rather than, you know, always being transactional. It's really just the idea of finding your inner strength on a day-to-day. Next, we're going to talk about King Solomon. Now, King Solomon is mentioned in the Bible, you know, multiple chapters. He even has the whole Psalms. He wrote the Psalms. But what he's most famous for, outside of the Bible, is the Goetia. The Greater Key of Solomon, the Lesser Key of Solomon. He was a man back in the biblical days, thousands of years ago. He was a great king. He was a magician. And he is most famous for summoning all of the demons, like all 72 demons that we know today, individually, okay? That he did his own, you know, ritual. Obviously, he was, you know, granted all this wisdom when he was a young child, because that's what he asked for. And apparently Archangel Michael was the one that came to him, right? So Michael and Solomon being connected with this, Solomon being granted all this wisdom, he definitely used that wisdom, and he wrote it down, obviously, and he experimented with it. So he is most known for as to summoning the 72 demons, main demons anyway, getting their names and telling, you know, asking how they work, what they do, and all that yada. Okay, Solomon also is someone that I work with, or the energy that I work with. Okay, and because of the fact that they don't have many depictions of what he could have looked like, you know, and much information about him, I just have to rely on the Bible and the Psalms. Okay, because they were written by him in the Songs of Solomon. So it gives me a pretty good idea of what kind of person he was, who is, okay? And it gives me an idea of, you know, always implementing wisdom in everything you do. Do not go too fast. Do not rush. I definitely recommend that you guys read The Lesser King and The Greater King, Key of Solomon, because it is filled with so much, like, magical stuff that what we know as the occult today. He is basically the father of the occult. Okay, and that's also why I work with that energy, because it's like the original wisdom, right? Of course, things have changed over time, but there are things that are mentioned about what Solomon has done that has not changed and has forever been, you know, forever will work on people, on angels, on entities, on energies, okay? And just how you project, you know, your vibration onto things, okay? Also, he lets us know what you should and should not mess with, and who cannot do certain things, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, knowing yourself. And that knowing yourself is the best thing. Because before he gets started, that's pretty much what he's pretty much saying. You know, you better not be a fearful person. You better not be a person with a really weak stomach, you know, and all that stuff, to the point where it's like, don't get yourself involved if you know you're not going to follow through, because the spirits I'm about to conjure are spirits that are going to, you know, follow you around. If you don't know how to get rid of them, they're going to stay around, and you can't blame anybody but yourself, because you asked them to be here, right? So you really can't control what they do unless you know how to control them. But at the same time, first, control yourself. So I work with Solomon for infinite wisdom. And the only thing that I actually really do is that I take his seal, and I'll burn a candle of pretty much any color to invoke the wisdom within me, or, you know, provoke myself to search out and seek out more wisdom, because you're never going to feel like you know it all. You're never going to feel like you know it all. And that is something that Solomon would preach as well. Nobody knows it all. Even he didn't know it all, and he was the richest man in the world. Like, forget Elon Musk, forget Jeff Bezos. Solomon was richer than everyone. And even he was just like, listen, there's always something you can learn. So he is an energy that I've worked with most of my life, not in a magical sense, but I've always been fascinated with the accountability that it takes to get yourself into certain things. Now we're going to speak about Jesus Christ. Now, obviously, the most popular figure in all of religion and humanity and spirituality, right? Going across the world and possibly in other universes, everyone has heard the name Jesus Christ. And as a what I consider to be an ascended master, which is a person who spends all their life learning about energy, magic, the occult, and the unseen, and mastering it, understanding, you know, what happens to you when you sleep, understanding on how to create miracles, understanding how to bend wills with or without tools, okay? Understanding psychology, understanding everything that Jesus did, right? If you were to be a practical person and not look at them as miracles, you would definitely see the very clear occult practice in everything he's done. The fasting and praying, the speaking to spirits, okay, and the way that people were drawn to him, and the way people hated him. So even he walked the earth and was not without haters. So that's something to take into account, especially if you are looking for that Christ consciousness, if you're looking for that higher level of understanding. And of course, like I said, I was raised Christian. So I was introduced to Jesus very early in life. But I was introduced to him as someone that I had to worship, okay, rather than a teacher, and rather than a wise man, rather than, you know, a do-gooder, whatever you call it, right? I was told to pray to him and ask for stuff. Now, I'm not going to sit here and lie. If you pray to Jesus and you really need something, yeah, I've gotten it every time, right? But I consider that to be magic. Right? There's the bowing of the head. There's the incantations of prayers. Saying certain prayers will get you certain things. And I'm going to tell you right now, those psalms are off the charts with results. Okay? Like, that's the only thing that they left in the Bible for all of us to use if you didn't believe in the rest of it. Okay? And praying to Jesus, definitely when seeking mercy, okay, I would say is more of the lesser of the evil transactions that you could possibly ask. Because asking for material things from Jesus Christ, knowing how he lived his life, to me seems kind of silly, right? Because he was an advocate for the poor. He was really caring about what was inside and the integrity. He cared very little for the physical material things, but worldwide, he's known as the guy you can call on if you want a new car or you want the winning lottery numbers, okay? But to me, I've always viewed him as a teacher. Okay, and not only as a teacher, you got to understand that at some point when you're a teacher, you had to be a student. So there's no limit that, you know, whatever Jesus learned, I could learn. That's why we call them ascended masters, because for him to perform those quote unquote miracles, which will be considered modern day magic, okay, especially if you saw it in a Disney movie, that's considered magic or the occult, you know, or witchcraft. Because Jesus himself was, in fact, a witch. Not a bad witch, but he was able to manipulate energies and make things happen. Okay? Now, do I feel like things in the Bible have been exaggerated? Absolutely. But the things that he has done, okay, that are mentioned in the Bible, practically, I would say about 80% of them can be done. Okay? Practically. Not so miraculously, but that also puts him down on an earthly level, and that was the lesson altogether. The lesson was is that he is the physical manifestation of God, so he has to be brought down to this level, down with us. How is he still divine while he's with us? So that means that if he's down with us and he's divine, that also means that we are divine. So that's what Jesus taught me. And the sacrifices that were made in order to teach this, the really brutal stuff that he went through, you know, that to me is, I consider that to be love. Now, Jesus might not know me personally, or at least when he walked around, he didn't know me personally, but I can connect with the spirit of Jesus, absolutely. And not just for material gain, just for love in general, just for as an ear to listen, you know, just a shoulder to cry on, you know, and just a reassuring force that even though you're going through something, there's still a divine force within you, okay? That's the reassurance that I get with Jesus. Now, I work with Jesus in particular where I cheat a little bit, because he did give us the secret about how if two or more are gathered, you are there in their presence. So I work with Jesus by praying, okay, and to acknowledge that if anyone happens to be praying at the exact same time for the exact same thing, that I will join those prayers. And that's how I work with Jesus. And it really has nothing to do with getting physical objects. It really is to just, you know, help me find my strength again. Help me figure this out. You know, help me have the motivation. Help me get out of this depression. Banish this depression for me. Okay, or help me with that. Not say that you're going to do all the work, but help me, assist me, please, in order to do this, okay? I will burn candles in an image that I believe what Jesus looked like, okay? And I will pray my own prayers from my heart, and I will sometimes pray the Psalms, and that's how I work with Jesus. And that's how I kind of navigate that energy, understanding that my time too will come to be in that Christ consciousness. Not only that, but also experience that eternal love, so I can also give that eternal love, that non-judgmental, unconditional love. Okay, that's why I'm not religious. I look at Jesus as a completely different thing than what religion sees him as. I don't worship the energy, okay, but I do acknowledge the energy, and I do honor the energy, which is big difference. All right, so now we're gonna dive into the darker side of biblical entities, okay? But however, I do work with these entities, so if you were a big fan of me and had expectations of me, you might as well keep scrolling or delete whatever. You now know this about me, okay? But we're gonna start off light. But we're going to move into the deep dark, okay? So we're going to start off with Lilith, okay? And I have products dedicated to Lilith on my website, okay? And I am a forever, you know, devotee, only because I know for a fact that there is a Lilith inside of me. So Lilith is Adam's first wife that was made from the same dirt that he was made from. So that's Lilith that they don't talk about in the creation story because of the fact that Lilith did not submit to Adam. And they did not want her part of any type of biblical lore because they didn't want any trace of any type of defiance coming from a female or anything feminine. Okay, they were supposed to have sex, and she said, "You get on the bottom," and he's like, "No, you get on the bottom," and she's like, "I'm not submitting to you because we're equal," and he was like, "No," and she was like, "Okay, then we ain't doing it," and then she left. Okay, she was like, "Okay, well, forget you and all this stuff, all right?" And Adam was like, "Yeah, but like, I need somebody to have sex with," and he goes back to God and just like, "Can you get her back or whatever?" And, you know, God sends messengers and sends himself to go get her back and convince her to come back to the garden or whichever. And her defiance, in her defiance, she never returns. She pretty much gives him the middle finger and she's like, "No," until he realizes that we're equal. Because the truth is, no tea, no shade. She wasn't trying to cause any problems. Her thing was just that there's no reason anywhere for me to submit to something that I am equal to. So, of course, not only is she banished from the Garden of Eden, but she's banished from all Christian mythology on the whole. Okay? On the entire whole, she is not involved, like barely spoken of, and then she's spoken of to be a demon. And that now she's on the side of the devil, right? Now she's just evil because she went against God. Okay? Technically, she didn't go against God. Okay, technically she went against Adam, okay? So let's just get that out of the way. But then she, you know, supposedly she grew wings, you know, to fly because she realized that she herself was divine and she manifested, you know, all of her abilities because she knew that she was equal. She knew she was created by God immediately and just started using the God force inside of her to do what it is she wanted to do. And that's something that Adam lacked. He lacked the God force knowledge, or at least the God force, you know, consciousness, and remained in the garden and remained naked and remained human-like. Well, now Lilith is off and she is, you know, she's divine now. She's goddess-like, okay? And, you know, she's mentioned later in King Solomon's Goetia, you know, as just a head. You know, she's the head of jealousy and she kills babies, you know, and stuff like that. And she doesn't want to see a single, you know, Adam's child to live because, you know, apparently she's jealous. But I don't think it's jealousy, you know, from how I work with Lilith. It just seems as though she feeds on the weak. They're the ones that were not taught about the real story and that, you know, that this entity is out there. Like, a lot of people who are aware of Lilith don't seem to have those issues, right? It's kind of like they know she's out there, so it's kind of like we're not gonna fall for her tricks, or we're not gonna fall for her anger, right? She's not angry against me because I know about my divine, okay? It's the ones that don't know about their divine that would fall victim to whatever it is she's trying to do. Supposedly, she unalives babies, you know, while they're sleeping, okay? And that's something that has been, you know, spiritually and occultically recorded for thousands of years, that it's the same spirit and it's the spirit of Lilith doing it, okay? Why? To be honest, I don't want to ever find out. I have researched a lot of things, but it's not anything I'm going to say on here. But how I work with Lilith is that I remember who I am, regardless of me being female, regardless of me being, even if I am classified as less than a man, that I am not, that I am divine and just as equal. Because what happens later in the creation story, God has to then put Adam to sleep, take one of his ribs out, and create Eve. Now, Eve is considered lesser than Adam because she is from his rib and not necessarily from God. So now she's technically a lesser human. Now, that's in the Christian context, if you were to look at it that way, okay? I don't think women are lesser than men. I believe that creation story was a creation of its own. But for some reason, Lilith has been consistent way before the Bible was created, in a lot of Jewish mythology, Lilith is nothing to be played with. Okay, that you do not underestimate the feminine energy and how the feminine energy can, in fact, eat you up, so to speak. Okay, all right, moving on. Now we're going to mention my boy Baphomet. Now, the reason I call him my boy is because Baphomet, the depiction of the goat god with the horns and the human body, but the fawn feet, okay? Because he's clearly a mixture of like three creatures, right? Is that he was designed, well, not designed, he is depicted as what we know today as the modern symbol of the Capricorn. And I happen to be a Capricorn. And the horns on his head and the pentagram across his chest represents, you know, the horned god, right? It's the pentagram of protection, technically upside down. But my favorite thing about Baphomet is that his hands are in opposite directions, which represents, you know, as above, so below. And I know I had spoken earlier in this episode about Stranger Things and the upside down. But Baphomet kind of really, you know, embodies that, okay? It's kind of like you cannot come to Baphomet thinking that all you see is all there is. Okay, because Baphomet has an energy where it's kind of like if you approach him, you know, with biases that you've been taught rather than being open to learning, okay, he would almost see you as like a dummy who is playing with fire. Okay, now I'm not going to say Baphomet is quote unquote dangerous, okay, but the energy that he projects, okay, with any intentions that you have, can be dangerous, but at the same time, he's not going to want you to come to him with saying that, you know, well, you think I'm the devil. And if you already think that coming to him, like, you're going to find a wall kind of shut off. Not to say that he won't work with you, but you're going to find yourself on the slow end of getting used to him. People who already have occultic knowledge and have been raised, I would say, on the dark side of spirituality have a faster pace relationship with Baphomet. It's a lot faster because you've really got to get that fear out of the way, okay? Because, you know, it really is almost like a prerequisite or even a requirement coming to him is that you've got to already have the fear out of your eyes, okay? You can't just be like, you know, looking at him, oh, I'm fearful. You're better off just not coming over there, okay? Because what it turns out is that Baphomet is a mixture of like Lucifer and Jesus energy, and the physical appearance of him was made that way so people would be afraid. And fear is one of the things he despises, especially if you are a devotee. Right? He has no problem putting fear into the eyes of your enemies, right? Or people who are trying to mess with you. That's the point. You're supposed to put fear into your enemies so your enemies would leave you alone. But a entity that is going to do that for you has a lot of love for you. I'm sorry, but just because a kid's parent, you know, happens to be really, really fat and big and physically intimidating doesn't mean that parent is bad. But you best believe that parent is going to exert their, you know, physical, you know, ways and, you know, try to intimidate you because they already know you're afraid. You've already prejudged. So that's the kind of energy I get from Baphomet. Okay. But the best part is as above, so below. Okay. The upside down, everything that's here is somewhere else as well, meaning that you could be having a shitty day, but there's a version of you having a shittier day. Okay, you could be, you know, feeling like you are having the worst time in your life, but there's a version of you that's having the happiest time. Okay, both things exist. Okay, and Baphomet gives you a choice. That's why you can't come to him being fearful. Okay, you can come to Baphomet and just be like, I know this is not the worst thing. Okay, you want to talk about jumping timelines, okay, and like shifting into different vibrations, like Baphomet is your guy. Okay? Because I'm telling you right now, most devotees of Baphomet are not going to complain about their life. They're not going to necessarily complain. It's going to be like, oh my God, like, I know this shit could be better. But I also know this shit could be worse. So you ask for guidance and help on how to make things better. But please, for the love of God, don't complain to Baphomet. Baphomet's not interested. Okay? He can already see the unseen. He already sees the best version of you. He's also seen the worst version of you. And complaining is kind of like sending you there, like in a broken, fallen elevator. So if you want to do that, by all means, complain to him, okay? But at the same time, you're going to end up, you know, fucking up yourself, and it had nothing to do with him. You'll be doing it to yourself, because that's the amplified energy that it'll give you. It's like, okay, you want to keep complaining? All right, well, let's just make it worse then. Let me send you to that timeline where everything is gone and you're living in the woods. Stop complaining about your 15-bedroom house and your loft, all because it's ran over by ants. Buy some damn Raid, okay, and get it done, all right? Like, the entitlement, it's the entitlement for me, okay? So I'm not saying that you got to be humble to come to him, because he's not too big on humility either, okay? He's just like Lilith, where it's kind of like you got to embrace, okay? Embrace that dark side. Be okay with being the villain. You got to serve self. That it's not selfish. Okay, he doesn't want you to hurt people, especially people that don't deserve it. Okay, that's not a thing. Okay, but at the same time, don't be so mindless that you end up hurting yourself. Okay, he definitely keeps you on your toes. Okay, and how I work with Baphomet is that I do have a whole collection devoted to him as well, with the pentagram and his visuals. I also have a physical Baphomet candle. It's like a baby Baphomet candle, because getting the adult one and the arms just always keep breaking off. So I got the baby one, so it just will stop breaking off. Okay. Also, Baphomet is one of the first gods or energies or deities that you can introduce to your children. Okay, because he by far is depicted the scariest, right? He's depicted the scariest. So if you introduce that to your children early in life, it'll be easier for them to work with him later, to the point where they don't have the fear anymore. And he doesn't like the ignorance of what people have already said about him, okay? And I'm going to tell you right now, being a Capricorn, I can definitely feel that. Because people assume a lot of things about Capricorn because the image of us has been bastardized, okay? And we are just as good, we're good, just as good as we are evil, okay? Evil does not come without a cause, and neither does our goodness. We are not automatically good to people, and we are not automatically bad to people. So think about that the next time you think about working with Baphomet. Don't think of him as the revenge god. Now, he can... Okay, but don't you be in the wrong at the same damn time, because Capricorn represents karma. And the last thing you want to do is be chased by an entity that you are afraid of, that you didn't know how to work with, okay, and really can't blame for making your life worse when all he did was amplify the energy you brought to him. So it keeps you, you know, to be accountable. So in my words, you know, Baphomet, very mindful. Very demure, okay? That's the kind of energy you need to bring. Very responsible. Very cutesy. Last but not least, we were talking about Lucifer. All right? So I had to, you know, slide you in to the dark side. Because there was a dark side to everything that I do. There's a light side, okay? And not everyone is love and light. And unfortunately, I could not be all light. None of us are all light. So whatever you've heard about Lucifer in the Bible, please throw that out right now, okay? Lucifer means the morning star. Lucifer has been around before the Bible, okay? The idea of Lucifer falling from heaven, he's the one that caused all the chaos. Twisted. The whole story is twisted. Not necessarily causing chaos, but have you ever been at a job where you were doing the most and you were treated unfairly? Okay, it's kind of like that. And then you quit, you put in your 2 weeks notice, and then all the employees that, you know, followed you or believed in you or was thinking the same thing, they quit too. It's kind of like that. Lucifer just put in his 2-week notice to a situation that wasn't fair. And there's no proof that it was God. There's no proof that it was God himself. Okay? Because I'm going to tell you right now, there's nothing wrong with putting in a 2-week notice. All right? So I just want to get that out of the way. Because the Bible has taught you that he's the angel in heaven. He was the angel of music, which he is. The most beautiful angel. And he started a mutiny in heaven because he wanted to be the boss. Now, that's possible, right? Because Lucifer represents the ego, okay? Wanting to be in charge rather than being a worker. And Capricorn, we definitely know what that's about, okay? However, the story has been painted in many different ways, like I said before, the Bible. And one story about Lucifer is that he was like, let's blow this popsicle stand. I'm never going to be the boss up here. That he didn't actually create a mutiny. He was just like, listen, if y'all want to work for me instead of that guy, come follow me. And he sends himself and his angels down to Earth. Okay? And they build a practical Earth and took whatever resources were there and created dominion over those things and created their own rules. Okay? And what was their rules? Serving self. Okay? Serving self. There is no proof that you need to worship Lucifer. Lucifer is about liberation. Okay? About being your authentic self. Lucifer was in the Garden of Eden telling Eve that if you eat that apple, you're going to be just like God. So you might as well eat it. And didn't she eat it? And didn't she know stuff after that? So did he lie? Did he lie? Okay? So to me, I don't see the evil that I've been fed. Because like I said, I grew up Christian. And I've been taught all my life that he's bad. Okay? But I was like, well, if she ate the apple and she became like God, I would think that God would be the bad guy because then he throws them out the garden. She could have eaten that apple and stayed in the garden. Right? And it's the technicality of disobedience. But then you start to wonder, why would God tell them not to eat that? Why would he put the tree there? Okay? Was this not his place? Or was this always Lucifer's place and that it was God again invading on Lucifer? Okay? That God and Lucifer are just brothers. Okay? And God seems to be this very invasive, competitive brother. And Lucifer is just trying to sit pretty on his little rock called Earth. Okay? So the way I work with Lucifer is to always, not always, but to liberate myself in situations that are oppressive, okay? And that's not every situation. These situations have to be very, very blunt, very, very obvious, okay? And very, very true to being oppressive or, you know, intentionally oppressive, okay? And I do have a collection dedicated to Lucifer in my shop, okay? But it has to do with expressing one's feelings truly and authentically, okay? And bringing to light where the injustices are happening, but at the same time, what you plan to do about it. It also is something that helps invoke followers who feel the same way to also do a domino effect of helping others to liberate themselves. Because Lucifer is nothing but a liberator. He liberated Eve from believing that she was fine just the way she was, and she wasn't. And Adam as well, okay? And obviously, they made a good life outside the garden, so they didn't die or anything, okay? So it's the story has been bastardized more than once, okay? At least until it went into the Bible, okay? Because it's been very, very clear in other mythologies that Lucifer is, in fact, the morning star, the savior, the one that gave man fire to say, hey, I know this place. This is my place. You're going to need this. I'm going to help you because you're obviously primitive, right? So Lucifer is pretty much a entity that I work with to expand on my knowledge, to expand on my wisdom, to expand on my authentic self, and to expand to my whole, not only physical self, but my spiritual self, that no rule set in place that is even meant to oppress me will ever succeed, because within me, I hold the power to break those chains. Okay, and that's how I work with Lucifer. Tell me how you work with Lucifer, if you do. If you think about doing it, just please understand, like I said, be authentic. Don't be fake. There's no way you can be fake to an entity that is invisible, that can hear and see all your thoughts. That is not a wise thing to do. Okay? Don't be like, well, I guess that, no. Are you being oppressed or not? Okay? And are you willing to do the work to rise above it? Are you really ready to look inside of yourself and figure out how you yourself can make this a liberating experience? Let me know in the comments. Please like, share, follow, and subscribe. I appreciate you listening. Again, I'm Christina with Karma's Eye Psychic LLC here with Mystical Charms here on Universal Spirit Podcast. And I will see you in the next episode in our series of Working with Deities. Bye.